The idea is you get out of North Bennett Street, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level, okay? You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today we are going to try and talk about some finishes and we'll see kind of where it heads because I just had a guest speaker come in and teach at North Bennett Street about finishes. And I guess I was walking away from that conversation just being like, this is awesome. But I think
you thought that because why? Because
he knew his freaking stuff. He explained it really well, and it was like a very practical application of a lot of stuff. Like, we got to do each one of the different types of finishes. We got to see, you know, he taught us how to apply it. So, I mean, from my standpoint, knowing nothing, it was a very good, like, primer into finishes where it was like...
Nice pun there.
Yeah. that was kind of unintentional. But I think it was something where... I knew nothing about finishes. I'm working on all these little pieces where, you know, first year we're taught like, we're going to use this thing on it. And, you know, just because this is what you use on it. And then the second year, it's supposed to kind of expand into more like philosophy and everything else. And this guy just came in and was very good at explaining philosophy of why he would use a varnish versus a finish versus a stain versus a lacquer versus all these different things. Anyway, it was just really interesting. Really, I wanted to have this conversation with you, Richard, because you've done a lot of finishing work, specifically spraying and painting, which you didn't get too much into spraying finishes, because I guess the assumption is that your average North Bennett grad is not going to do much spraying work, that's more the painter's job, but to set the painter up for success in that world. And also, I think... he was talking to carpentry and preservation carpentry classes versus like a furniture class where they would do a lot more spray finish stuff. But I was also curious your philosophy on finishes as well, because you put a lot of products out there, and I didn't know if you guys did finish a lot of
them. Well, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that you were enthralled by it, because finishing can be so mysterious.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you hear about varnishes, right? Well, there's no such thing as a varnish anymore because of the plastics and everything else that go into the finish. So I've always looked back and wondered, like, what was the original varnish, right? What were they originally doing? And my whole thing with linseed paint and my disenchantment with the plastics and new paint, there's a lot of science that have gone into it, a lot of technology and changing of materials that it is very interesting to me. I remember that... the reason dyes are better than stains is because stains, you're applying pigment over top of the grain. And so you are clouding the grain. Whereas if you put a dye on, there's nothing to hide the grain. And so I think that's always interesting. And that's why when you stain a piece of maple or a piece of pine and it gets all blotchy, it's because
this is where this guy like was so awesome, because I'm sitting here, I'm going to like his section on colorants and he's like stains. And then he does like two little arrows, like dyes versus pigments. Dyes, small color particles, usually organic pigment, can be very transparent because of their small particle size, and they tend to be less light fast, aka they fade over time. But then pigments are traditionally less organic sources. So iron oxide, charcoal. And then pigment particles are larger in size, which makes them more light fast. So you see the dyes, you see the natural wood a lot better in a dye versus in a pigment, which is like, you know, exactly what you're saying. But it's just like, I was like, whoa, this guy broke that down. I was impressed with this guy, Brad Walcott.
What do you think about finishes and stuff like that?
Most of what I did was paint, so... I have done some staining, but I'm not really that good at it. I have gotten into like blotchy stuff, and you stain it and it's like, oh, that looked so good. And now it's just a blotchy mess. I think part of that is probably having like a good quality wood, right? Because yeah, you can't
There's some stains that just, there's some woods that just don't take stain very well. And pine is one of them.
Like maple,
maple doesn't take stain very well. And so, you know, we've shown up at jobs before with maple cabinets, and the homeowner goes, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. We ought to stain it. And then you stain it, it's just like, you know, not only is staining a kitchen cabinet not really historic, but it's also can be ugly if you mm-hmm. don't choose the right wood.
And if you get the stain wrong, you could have like this. I was talking to this cabinet man the other day, and he's like, we used to finish all of our own stuff. Like they would pre-finish it in their shop and then send it out, because what they were seeing is that they would install just kind of unfinished materials, and then the finishers would just come in and wreck it. And he's like, well, our cabinet looked so good until you guys screwed it up. But yeah, you got to be on point. Like if you, like that urn you made, when you put like a bad finish on it, it's like right. all that work is just.
Well, and that's what I'm sitting there in his class, and I'm like, I've got a table. I've got cherry that's sitting in my backyard right now, seasoning, ready to go, you know, get worked on, that I'm going to be staining and I'm going to be finishing. So, or not staining, but finishing. And I'm like, how can I not mess that up? And I've got this urn that I'm going to be finishing. How do I not mess that up too? You know, so.
The other thing is that finishes can be very time stamped, right? And you know, the high gloss catalyzed finished, that, you know, would be sprayed on a piece of furniture, maybe like that, that that's not really high gloss. But, mm-hmm. You know, and what the conversations we're having with clients is if we want this to look historic, if we want it to look old, then we either need a wax finish, we need a shellac, we need something else, because a catalyzed spray varnish, it wasn't something there. And the conversation I always have with Brad Rhodes, our finishing genius here, is, you know, he
always Brad's, the finishers are always Brad's,
yes, they have to be named Brad, is having this authenticity, right, but almost being invisible. He came up at one point with what he was calling his invisible finish, because he hates wax, because wax doesn't seal the wood. Wax is just it's an open pore, moisture can move in and out, and he goes, we need to seal it, or otherwise it can still move and other things like that. So we had a job where we were doing the client wanted a oak room that had looked like it had been stripped, like it was a piece of stripped furniture. So literally he stained the room, and then wiped it off, bleached it. There was still pigment and stain inside the open grain of the oak. And then he went back and put his invisible finish on, which looked, because if you wipe finish on top of wood, it turns dark.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And most clients don't want it to turn dark. They want that finish. They want it to look like that. And so anyway, it's
you
those
see
are
that
those
lot.
Are the conversations we get into. Yeah. It's just like, how do you accomplish this?
You see that a lot with like white oak. Like people yeah. love the way white oak looks raw.
Yeah.
But as soon as you put like a polyurethane on it, it ambers, and then people are like, oh, I don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I agree with them. I like the raw look.
Well, I mean, the polyurethane is that example of the plastic that
it's
we
just
don't
a film.
Yeah, you do not want to put on, if you want an historic finish, you do not want to put on there. It's plastic, and you're capturing it in plastic.
All that stuff, what's that guy's name? Samuel McIntyre? He built furniture, right? And it was stain grade?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did he seal it with?
Probably shellac.
Yeah, it was a shellac, French polish.
And it was satin or glossy or?
Well, now we don't know what it looked like when it was original, but now it's, yeah, so.
Probably more satin.
Did he talk about French polish?
He didn't. He said French polish is one thing that I'm not going to talk about, because you probably aren't going to get into doing much French polish work.
So shellac is basically, what is it? The dung of a
it's a shell of a beetle in Asia, and so when they create it like a home that they live in, and then they kind of move on, but it's left behind as residue on branches.
Are you serious?
And it's harvested there, and then you add that to alcohol. So like you can buy the shellac,
what?
Like little beads,
flakes.
And you can mix it with alcohol.
If you go, like if you go to Woodcraft, you can buy shellac flakes.
Well, there's actually if you
that's so weird.
If you want to buy shellac from like a good source to where the flakes are fresh because they have a shelf life. There's shellacfinishes.com, and they've got the guy is fresh pretty up to date. It's like you know they're harvested within 3 months of when you get them, and so then you can use them better because the Woodcraft ones, they could have been sitting on a shelf in the back for years and years and years, so you may not get a good finish off of them because they may be whatever. But I mean, shellac is also nice because it's reversible. So
or it's fixable, repairable.
It's reversible. It's an evaporative finish. So, you know, you take those shellac little beads and you put them in alcohol. And so the alcohol breaks down the shellac. It puts them in the alcohol solution. And then you apply it with paint on whatever. And then the alcohol dries off and the shellac is left behind like it was in that beaded state as it was before. But then if you want to take that off, you apply alcohol onto it, make that solution again, and then the shellac is completely solution. Like
that is
you know,
crazy. Just I've sprayed a lot of shellac.
Yeah.
Did you? In the form of a thing called Bin Primer, B-I-N.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. Like, it's so good. I've always said, like, why can't this just be the paint?
Yeah.
Because it's only a primer.
Well, a lot of people don't like it because it's not waterproof. That's like
well,
one of shellac
too is a great knot sealer. Like you'll have people will seal knots with like so it doesn't bleed through the wood.
We were taught to do that.
Paint. Yeah,
he was like if you have a lot of like a very knotty wood, you need to seal everything with shellac first and then do your finish on top of that because shellac. The crazy thing about shellac is it's completely natural and it plays well with every other finish that's out there right now. So like you can put on any finish on top of shellac and it's gonna work out great.
I helped a guy one time he got this house like a pretty good deal but it was a rough house and it was like someone smoked in it for like 80 years and I just went in like and I was like oh this is awful. I sprayed everything with that Bin shellac and it's like still good to this day.
No you couldn't way. Smell the smoke anymore?
Not at all.
That's
wild. I sprayed like when I say everything I got like a 20 inch tip fan on my sprayer. It was just like like walls, ceilings, cabinets, doors, hinges. Like I covered it all and then we replaced stuff. But it sealed it off.
It sealed it. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It blocked the odor.
It's so interesting
completely.
That's where the odor is coming from, that it's sunk into the wood fibers. And that's
It's like absorbed in.
That's so interesting.
Imagine your lungs.
But Jackson called when he was going through this. He goes, why don't you guys use shellac? And I was like, well, it's water. It's not waterproof. And so you can't use it on exterior doors. But interior stuff, it's excellent.
Could you prime with it on your exterior doors?
And, I don't know.
And then because you when you, you send could. Your 100-year window out, you're just a latex primer like Windsor and stuff, right?
We're now doing all linseed.
Oh, okay.
But linseed. So
we're doing a linseed primer and a linseed paint.
So, you know, linseed's one of those interesting ones where it kind of doesn't fall into any one of like the finishes categories technically, but linseed's kind of like one of those historic bases that's used in a lot of stuff. So like we were talking about varnishes earlier. Varnishes is a combination of an oil and a resin. And they used to use a lot of natural resins that they don't anymore because they have urethane, phenolic resin, alkylid, and acrylic. And so those are all the like types of resin now, but it's usually one of those things in combination with linseed oil, tung oil, or mineral oil. And, but yeah, the linseed oil, depending on whether or not it's boiled or raw linseed oil, do you guys know which one you guys use?
Well, there has to be dryers in it or else it wouldn't dry.
Right.
So, and the difference between boiled and boiled means there's dryers in it that allow it to dry.
Yeah.
Because the raw linseed oil is what they would put on gutters sometimes.
Yeah.
So that gutters wouldn't rot out. And so,
because you can put linseed oil on a house, but the dry time for linseed oil is like 400 years. So it's like, you know, you need a dryer to help. So like when we did our cabinets, those were raw linseed oil mixed with pigment and what is it called? Turpentine? Balsam turpentine. And so the balsam turpentine soaked it into the wood and then it dries out quicker, you know, to the touch. But it still took
your little shop cabinet.
That's right.
If you're watching this going, what in the world are these guys talking about?
Yeah.
This is, it can get pretty deep,
yeah,
pretty quick. And so there are, you know, when we are taught this in North Bend Street, we're like acetone, turpentine, denatured alcohol, all these different things and how they're used. It's a pretty complicated, lot of chemicals, a lot of different stuff that I feel like as craftsmen, you need to have a working understanding of it and understand why stains make pine blotchy, but I'm not sure how deep you need to go. I mean, you know, you understood it and practiced it, right? But but most carpenters don't.
No, and I think a lot of this is like very, you know, too detail oriented, but I think one of my takeaways from it was just that it's very important to know the one that you're going to go into, like however you're going to finish your product. And if you're not going to finish your product, great. Don't even worry about it. But
leave it to the professional painters.
Leave it to the painters or leave it to whatever. But if that's your camp, I think one of the things that you need to remember is, you know, surface preparation is kind of everything. And I don't know if you remember this
for sure.
All your painting days.
Yes.
But
yeah,
like basically
definitely.
When you finish, no matter how you finish a piece, and maybe this is common knowledge, but I didn't know it. So, you know, but whenever you finish a piece, the imperfections, the flaws, the, you know, the random tool scuff that you have on it is going to show through the finish. It's not like the paint is going to cover over it or take the place of that. So you got to make sure
your pieces. What kind of prep did you do on your stuff?
No, I mean, all of it.
Would you sand everything?
Yeah, I would sand it. I would feel it. Like if we just say we come in and we put a wainscot in.
You did an accent wall now.
Oh, tell us what you do.
You have to bring that up. Say I did some pine doors at a depot. Yeah, we would say we come in and do an accent wall. And we... Yeah, we would sand it. We would caulk it. We would fill all the nail holes.
What sandpaper would you go? 120, 80, 150?
I'd probably start at like 200 and work it all the way up to like a 320. And then a lot of times I would finish it.
Random orbital sanders or were you using?
No, I was using a surf prep sander. It technically is a random orbital sander, but it's a square.
Yeah.
And it turns on an eighth of an inch. So imagine like a square like this size just going like that. It's like a buff sander, and it's, I think, 3 by 4 inches or 3 by 5. And
we
it's
use those
so
all
good
because that gets into those corners a lot better.
Yeah. And you can put different pads on it. They can contour into this shape of like moldings and the pad just fits and does all that. But before I had that, I was using like 3M sanding sponges. So I would install, caulk, fill, sand. I would actually sand before the caulking. It's been a while. I'm trying to think how this goes.
Why?
Why what?
Why would you sand before caulking?
Because say you put your caulking in the 90 degree of a style and rail, and then now you got to go back and sand it. You'll scuff up your caulking. And if it's not like super cured, you could like put tears in the caulking. So you sand it first and then we'd caulk it. And then we would do a light sanding sometimes after the caulking. But we would use like, you know, the Bondo, like the glazing putty. Mm-hmm. Have you ever walked in and it's all the red dots everywhere? We would use that for little scuffs and tool marks of stuff.
Yep.
And then I would prime it with the Ben Shellac primer. Our first coat is what I always called our reveal coat, because it would reveal to us like all the mistakes and like, oh, you didn't caulk there. Oh, you have another mark here. Sand it again after the primer, fill all that stuff. And then I would go, some people would put 2 priming coats, but I would then go into a first coat. And then what I learned later, and I've now practiced this on my own house, the painter who works with you, the lady.
Yeah, Michelle.
She has a guy that's like her lead guy. And I would just talk to this guy. His name's Eduardo. And I would walk into the 1928 period revival and I like touch that paint and I'm like, what? Why is that so smooth, you know? And I just put my filthy hands all over that. I was like, this is so nice. And then I saw Eduardo, and I would ask him stuff all the time. And he's like, what I do is I basically do everything I just told you. He uses the same primer too. I think Ben Shellac, I think that's what he used. He paints it with this thing called Benjamin Moore Advance, which is my favorite paint. And then he lets it dry a little bit. Not fully cure, And then he comes back with a wet sanding sponge, and then he just like with cold water and he wet sands it.
Wow.
Almost like a car, you know, like doing body work.
Yeah.
And then he wipes all that away, and then he just missed it for like one final coat. And it's so smooth.
Wow.
So I tried that on my mantle and it worked. It was it wasn't as smooth as his, I will say that, but so it was really.
It's interesting that they, because they must have wanted an industrial finish, because typically people want the hand brush thing.
Yeah, I see a lot of people who want, where when I was doing it, I would see so many people who wanted it to look like an automotive finish. That was what they were saying. I want like an automotive finish. So you had to spray. But there wasn't a thought to like try to talk them out of it either. I was just like, I'm trying to give you what you want. Versus now, I'd try to educate.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's interesting. Historically, people would have wanted, like I'm talking pre-1890s, people would have wanted the smoothest finish you could come up with. But then after the invention of the spray thing, whenever everything is starting to get these smooth finishes, they're starting to be easier. Now it's like, well, I don't want a spray finish because that's the easy way out. Now I want a hand-painted finish, you know? It's interesting.
My conversations with high-end designers is they want the hand brushing because it has gives it a hand look, a
correct.
Handmade
yeah.
look.
Not, texture.
Yeah, it just...
But I'm saying back in the day, they would have tried to reduce as many brush strokes as they would have.
I heard you say
or
that.
This is
I,
what
I
Brad was saying.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, the problem with...
I wouldn't have thought that.
The problem with today's, like if you go down to Home Depot and get a gallon of Behr and just like, I'm going to get this hand finished, you know, and you put it on, you're going to be left with like huge streaks of like brush strokes that are like so deep. It's not what you want.
Did you use Penetrol?
What is it?
Penetrol? That was supposed to make...
Oh, to make it smoother?
Yeah.
No, because the paint technology by the time I was painting, it was already in the paints. Like Benjamin Moore Advanced, which is what that house was all sprayed with by Eduardo. It's really good. I don't know that you'd be a fan of it because it's like a plastic film,
right.
I guess. But like if someone wants that, that's a good choice.
Well, that designer was a modern designer. And so I suspect he called for that because he wants that kind of finish.
Yeah, but I've heard of Penetrol, and there was one for oil base too, right? Or was Penetrol the oil one?
I thought
Floetrol was the water
was
one.
Was the oil one.
Penetrol is the oil one. And then you have oils, which oils are great, but the yellow, you know?
Right.
A lot of people loved oil, which like a lot of places now, it's illegal anyways.
Well, and I don't think it's, I guess that's where I go is just, I don't think it's the same product anymore. I don't think paint's the same product anymore. And so, you know, the thing that was so attractive to me about the linseed is that it allows vapor to move out through the finish. And so, and our front door, which we painted with linseed paint, you know, when that, I mean, that is an extremely harsh environment. It's a Western facing
black
door. Right. And
yeah.
So we had tried to paint it with like the fine paints of Europe and it just bubbled up. I remember that. It got so hot. There was moisture underneath. Moisture tried to come out of the wood because it got so hot. And it bubbled the paint. That has not happened with this paint. And when it gets dulled down, we're going to be able to take a rag with some boiled linseed oil, wrap over the door, and it kind of refreshes it. So that's kind of a living finish that you'll hear sometimes people talk about, a living finish that has patina, that accepts things.
And you said that's now the primer for your 100-year window and your doors?
It's not only the primer, it's the finish coat too.
But are you're not finishing... Because you don't know what color these things are going to be, right?
Right. But we're, like, for our 100-year windows, we're painting the windows, well, about half the time we're painting
really?
The windows the final coat.
So you're giving them a finish complete. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. That is cool.
Because if you use your linseed primer or paint, is there anything that can't go over it? Like,
I don't
what
think so.
It could just...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it in my notes, but there was some thing where he was talking about how they prevent that yellowing.
In the oil?
Yeah. Because they've added a new thing to where, you know, when you use an alkaloid or, you know, they've got one of those things where one of them doesn't yellow as much.
Well, I still feel like there are people out there that say, oh, I want an oil paint because that's going to be better than the alkaloid.
And I'm so over oil.
And so my when I was working with Windsor and they were going through all of their science trying to figure out the best primers, they were just like, it's not true anymore that oil's better than water-based. And I think that's part of that. They've just taken all the good stuff out of it, and so they've stripped it of the things that allowed it to last a long time, and so it's not as good. That, too, is why, you know, is part of the problem. But they were paying scientists to look into it and figure it out and testing and doing all that stuff. They said it's just not true anymore.
Yeah, there's a big, like, when I was doing the finishing, oil was just such a mess. Like, it just, mineral spirits, you know, to clean right. everything. The smell is just, like, awful. Yeah. So I'm happy with the way water-based has come. There's a couple of guys who are probably, like, this is all, like, historic, like, traditional stuff, right?
This guy's doing modern stuff.
Okay, but, like, the linseed oil, that's...
Yeah, he didn't have a ton of linseed oil in his presentation. But yes, linseed is the older.
Because there are some finishers now, like on Instagram and YouTube, who are like, they're using two-part finishes, which I don't know how much we're going to get into the weeds on it. But it's like you take part A, part B, you mix them, you have a 30-minute pot life,
right.
and you spray it. And it's basically like a industrial film
yeah.
that's on stuff. And they're doing that on a lot of cabinetry. There's one guy in Tennessee, Eric Reason, who I've talked to. He does a lot in like big Nashville, big like houses. Like,
see, I think those high gloss finishes are going to go away. I think that they were hot for a while.
Well, he's doing like satins and mattes too.
Oh, he is?
But they're, yeah, what I'm just saying though is that he's using like curable products that are just like, bam, they're done.
Yeah.
I think that's what this guy did
as well.
Really?
Yeah. He did a lot of finishes for Harvard. As well as like a bunch of other like industrial areas where they needed like a really solid finish on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, and I think he was calling those varnishes because they were like a two-part oil and resin. I can't remember the name of the.
Varnish just means finish? What does that even mean?
It's an oil and a resin. That's what varnish
okay.
means.
Okay.
So it's like, those are the two components in it.
Oil being?
Linseed, tung, mineral okay. oil.
So I think yeah. another area craftsmen should understand finishes on floors. Polyurethane for us was the finish you put on. And then I started seeing water-based finishes that dried really quick that you could do a lot more with. Then because they started taking things out of the polyurethane that would allow it to dry faster, it was soft for like 30 days. And like we would finish a floor.
And don't put tape on it.
2 weeks later, you would take the refrigerator, put the refrigerator on its wheels going to the thing, and you'd see this track going through the house where the finish was so soft. It was so then we started going to water-based finish because it wanted a faster cure time. You weren't waiting 24 hours after you finished. They could do multiple finishes in a day.
Build up a
and
film.
It's harder because the other thing that happened if the family had dogs.
Yep.
To scratch the hell out of the floor because the dog's running across it. So that's where polyurethane used to be this, you couldn't get anything harder or better. And then, you know, that don't think that's true anymore.
Yeah, that what you're describing for those floors, a lot of them are using like what's called like a hard wax oil now. And there it's the thing where they have a crazy quick dry time. Their curing is so much quicker for whatever reason. And they leave behind a much stronger, much more durable surface.
I remember my mom, so this would have been in the late 60s, having a floor polisher.
And she, oh, like a buffer?
She would wax and polish the floors.
That's cool.
What was she applying over it? Was it like a wax?
I don't know.
Was she a flooring contractor?
No, just kidding. They're the only guys with those.
I think you had it like you had a vacuum cleaner. Like yes. you'd polish your floors.
I want to bring those back because they look so nice when they get buffed.
Really?
The floors
problem is they're slippery as hell.
Yeah. You're running in your socks.
Yeah. And so anyway, I remember her doing that.
What would she hit him?
I think a wax finish. Wax? Yeah, it was a wax polish that they had put on top of the floors.
When I did mine, I went to the flooring store over here on 121 Oak Floor Supply, And the guy was like, try out this thing. It's called Loba.
Yeah.
It's like a, and I loved it.
Really?
Yeah. You can brush it on. There's no like talent needed to like finish right. the floor. And you know how, like, I don't know if you ever try to finish a floor, but for some reason, like if you start at one side staining and then like, say you're dipping your rag or however you do it and you drip onto the thing.
Right.
And then you come back over and you get to that drip. It's like extra dark.
Yes.
It's so frustrating. But with this stuff, you can throw it on and brush it and it looks, so it made me look good.
That's really
good. I'm not good at finishing floors because there's a lot that goes into that. Like people don't get it.
And you did a brush finish?
I just did it with just brushed it on with a big 4 or 5 inch brush.
What kind of brushes do you use for a lot of your jobs?
When I was painting with oil, like by hand, I used a black bristle Purdy brush. And then
what is that made out of? Is that like a synthetic brush?
There's some that are made out of like animal hair.
Yeah.
And then this one I think was like a synthetic.
Okay.
And then from there on, I just used like a nylon, I think it's called a Purdy Nylox or something, or Wooster, whatever the brand was.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a little.
One of the things about working with this linseed paint is he's given us a whole different set of brushes to use.
Really?
What are you using?
Well, like he has a round brush that you use. Like
Like a little buff.
I don't know what I didn't take the lesson to figure out which ones you used.
The way that the brushes work is the ferrule clamps the bristles to the actual handle of the brush, and where the handle of the brush sits, your paint will pool inside of that little void where that handle is. And so when you dip it in, the like straw action, the capillary action sucks it into that section and then holds like a reservoir there. And then when you push it sideways and those bristles spread out, it reverses that capillary action and it spills it over whatever surface you're on. So if you have a flat brush and you use it on like a molding or someplace that has a lot of like surface that needs to get covered, it's not going to do as well as one of those round brushes because of the way that the paint is going to be distributed over that thing. So if you did it with a flat brush and you did it over like a small molding, the reservoir of paint is actually in the middle. So you're going to get an uneven spread of paint. So that's why you need those round brushes.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
I suspect there's some people listening who are finishers and they're like, oh my gosh, these guys don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Oh, I suspect there's some people who are finished listening. Because they're like, what is this?
Well, like one of the things that Brad was saying is like a must have for him was like, no polyester. You can't use
polyester.
Foam, like brushes. Like
synthetic. We've used polyester.
You're able to use some synthetic stuff, but most of the time, don't. He was saying Taclon is the one that mimics sable, which is like okay to use, but the
sable, like sable fur.
Yes, like so the sable brushes are what the fine painters use, like if they're doing like artist paint. So that's like the best brushes that you're gonna get, but you never need sable brushes for finishing work on wood because they're not gonna spend the time to take a sable fur and add it to a wooden, like a finishing paintbrush for a 4 or 5 inch surface. Because that's going to be, $1,000 paintbrush at the end of the day. And you can get rid of them over time, and you don't want to spend $1,000 every time. But he was saying the best was hog bristle or China bristles. That'll get you through most everything. Sometimes you need docks, sometimes you need that. But he was like, do not use polyester.
Are you going to get into finishing? Like, are you going to finish your
urn? I'm going to finish the urn just to get the experience with it, but I don't know if I'm going to be actively ever.
What are you going to put what kind of finish are you going to put on the urn?
I think I'd do a shellac. Because it's an interior piece. The shellac is reversible, so if we ever want to change our mind and do something else later on, very easy to do. But then also, the shellac plays really nicely with everything else, but I'd put 4 or 5 coats of shellac on
just
that.
Just clear shellac.
Yep, de-waxed, clear shellac, and it'll leave a really clean finish. Maybe would hit the thing with an oil before the grain with an oil before just to kind of give it that pop, but the shellac should do that in and of itself. But
well, if you have some scraps left over,
yeah,
do some tests first.
Yes.
Because you don't want to be sanding that off when you're not happy with it.
Totally.
Have you, are you going to gold leaf it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of half talked about that, so I think so, but.
Like we meaning you?
He and I talked about that. Yeah, no, I'm going to do it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I've got a guy in my class. Well, Rich Freiberg, the guy we mentioned before, is a second year instructor. He gold leafed a dome near the school. And so two of my classmates, Ryan being one of them, work for Rich. And so,
oh, Ryan that we met.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he knows how to gold leaf. And so does the other guy who works for Rich. And so I was going to get their help. They've said it's fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
But
it's just like a piece of foil, right? And you kind of push it on.
Actually pick it up with the.
Yeah. You can do it a lot of different ways, but you brush down like this glue on the surface and you can pick it up with tweezers and lay it on there and then push it on the back with like a foam thing to like get it to adhere. Or you can brush it on with a brush. And so sometimes they like brush on the sticky stuff, tap the paper, and then brush the thing on to the back.
But and still, it's going to be the swags.
It'll be the swags, which will be...
And the maple leaves.
Yeah.
Trying to push it into all the detail.
The guy who did, Robert Marshall, who did our gold leafing, he actually was painting it yellow and then putting the I don't understand exactly what he's doing, but...
The yellow is the tack, like the sticky stuff that it'll adhere to. There's yellow and there's red that are the two different types that adhere the gold leafing. It's like a gold leafing base, I guess. But the red is for more industrial purposes, and the yellows gives it a nicer shine to it and is for more interior surfaces.
Look at that. The kid knows something. Or at least I don't know anything about this, so he could be.
You can't correct it.
Yeah, can't correct it. Good. Well, I think that's enough on finishing. If anybody's still listening.
I'm finished with finishing.
Well, can I share another fun fact?
Nope, we're done.
All right.
No, I'm just kidding.
There cannot be a fun fact.
I think it's finishing. Pretty fun.
Okay, what's...
Do you know how the sheen is categorized?
Yes.
You did know that? That was a cool one.
Wait, like by flat or matte, flat, satin?
Yeah, but it's about the degrees.
Oh, no.
It's the degree of reflectiveness, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought they just poured glossy stuff.
So like a 10 finish is like a really low finish.
That's right, because...
I know that from my buddy Brad.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And so if you want a wax finish looking thing, you want a 10.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's exactly right. 10 to 15 is matte. Eggshell is technically 15 to 20, but apparently they made up eggshell just to kind of make people feel good about themselves, I think. Satin is 20 to 40. 40 to 60 is semi-gloss. 60 to 80 is gloss. And then anything over 80 is like pure gloss towards like mirror coating. Like 100 is a mirror. So it's all about how the surface
reflects it.
What do you
mean? Like, what are these numbers? Like,
So like if you think about the like how something reflects back off of it, towards
they
your
just
eyes.
Have a scale for that.
They've got a scale for that, and so
you could say that about anything.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's all about like when you're talking about a finish on top of it, like you've got the base surface of material, and when you look at the base surface of material, it's sanded, so it's got these little grooves.
Yeah.
And so when you like stain something, it fills those grooves, and that's like level one.
But I would say this table's like a 20.
Right. Mm-hmm. But as you kind of continue to layer over that, you get built up and that becomes your like final finish. So the actual surface of the material is here and then the finish is up to here. And so the light goes through that first layer and bounce off the second layer. And the degree at which it bounces off
is the number.
Is the finish, yeah.
What would you say this wood is?
Like a 0?
Yeah.
1?
5 or 10.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Anyway, I thought that was a fun fact, but...
Any other fun facts? Any other fun facts?
Any other brain busters?
You can get skunk bristles for a brush. Thought that was kind of crazy. Like, who in their right mind? Someone in the comments is going to be like, no, you got to have skunk. There was an interesting section on finishing the finish and how you would kind of come to the end.
Finishing the finish.
Right. You know, you put the finish on there, but how do you seal it? How do you kind of put the final thing on there? I thought that was interesting. Like, there's a special kind of steel wool.
Oh, yeah. Steel wool finishes.
Right.
Really buffeted.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the 4-0, but not getting ones that have oils in it. Like, there's an oil-free steel wool. So, anyway. All right. That's all we need to talk about on finishes.
Did you talk about pumices at all?
You did?
All right.
That's another finish on the finish.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's like a pumice stone. It's like how you polish a finish.
Yeah, he talks about wax as well and how to, you know.
I think the French polish, which is a built up shellac finish, is actually you're taking pumice stone and you're basically polishing on top of your finish, more and more built up so that
it becomes more and more polished as he goes. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Pretty cool.
That is cool.
Anyway, so thanks for indulging me. I thought that was a really cool, interesting topic, and I knew Richard would have a lot of good things to say about that.
Jackson was pumped about this one.
It's just fun to learn something, all right? All right, thanks for watching this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.